Welcome back, The Lighter Side, Joe Grammatico along with Tom Kaliopoulos, and today we're going to be talking about some of the all-time great NHL tough guys with well-rounded games. Who'd you like to have on your team to build around? Great supporting cast player. Tom, come on in. How's it going?
Hey, Joe. Great. I was out and about trying to get some ideas. My wife and I have a 5-year anniversary tomorrow, so not a lot of options out there, Joe. I don't have luck doing the online shopping thing, so maybe my wife will like a side of beef. Maybe there's a beef shortage going on, so maybe I can surprise her with a side of beef with a little bit of a ribbon tied around it. What do you think?
There you go. That'll go over well.
Yeah. Yep. So, I don't know. We're kind of limited in what I'm going to do here, so I'm kind of up against it, but yeah, I figure I'd take a little break from the beef shopping and calling farmers and talk a little puck with you. I saw an interesting shakedown of the brackets. If the playoffs were to, start today, some of the matchups were pretty interesting. Did you get a chance to see that at all?
No. Nope.
Basically broken down, that you got two of the division leaders in the four divisions basically got a first round bye. But get some of the matchups here, Joe. I'll just brief, do a quick dusting for you real quick. They had Calgary going against Winnipeg in now all these are in the first round, would be a best 2 out of 3.
Okay. That would be tough. That's a tough one for Calgary.
Yeah, it is. That's a tough matchup because you're playing a physical team and to go, I wouldn't know how they're going to do this. What would you want to do? 2 out of 3 is a crapshoot. You have one bad period, it could be the end.
Right. And,
where do you start that? I'm guessing they're going, the team with the best record will get home ice advantage. Maybe it's a 1-1 or 1-1-1 format. I don't know how they're going to do that, but that's the only way you could do that. So yeah, Winnipeg and Calgary would be a tough matchup. Next one I came across was an interesting one as well, Chicago-Edmonton. Thinking that would be a pretty high-scoring affair, wouldn't you?
Yeah, and Chicago's, they get the luxury, right? They would only make it because of their extend in the field, correct? They were
exactly.
I believe.
And they're one of the teams that cut the bubble as far as if they decided to just go with a format of the top teams in each division,
right,
be left out. Yeah. So I'm guessing this is a bracket based on the top 12 teams in each conference.
Okay. Yeah, Edmonton they weren't good defensively before the stoppage, so I'm assuming that they didn't get any better while they've been laid off. So that's another one that Chicago could steal.
Well, yeah, anytime you got Patrick Kane and Taze and some of the veteran players that are still playing well and producing, I don't think that's a nice draw either for Edmonton. A team that's trying to, shake some, monkeys off their back. They just need to, all the first round picks they've had and the missed playoffs, and then you got best player Connor McDavid, one of the best players anyway. They haven't had much success since, and, if they get knocked out of that, that would create a big problem. I don't know what they would be doing over there in the way of management or player shuffling, but it'd be pretty interesting. I'm also looking at the next round, or the next game set matchup is, an interesting one as well on the west there. It's, Vancouver and Phoenix.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess it would depend on where Arizona picks up, because they were good at the beginning of the year, and then they won a lot of tough games, and they started coming back to reality the second half of the season. I think Vancouver could pull that one out.
Yeah, it's like, you're right. The Phoenix played very tight to the vest, I remember early in the year, and they got timely goal scoring. I think it would pretty much have to play out that way for them to have a chance against Vancouver, who was kind of playing there. They were kind of upping their game a little bit, you know, coming the last 2 weeks of the season. I do have another series here on that side of the bracket. We have Nashville and Minnesota Wild. Two similar teams to me.
Yeah, I agree. That one, if you just go on history, Minnesota always seems to perform very badly in the playoffs. Just based on that, I'd go with Nashville in that one. They seem to get real bad goaltending in the playoff, even though they have a good goalie.
Yeah, which is puzzling. Who's that, Dubnyk?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a pretty sound goalie. It puzzles me. I know that, I mean, there was a couple stints in the playoffs where they really, you know, he had some shutout streaks going and stuff, and their team played well, but they always seem to kind of stall in the scoring department when it comes to the playoffs. And I think Nashville has a little bit more in that department for Minnesota to be able to sustain. Well, you know, like I said, best of three scenario, you know, team could get, I mean, you're talking in the course of 3 or 4 days, right? You know,
right.
So anything can happen. Yep. But hey, Joe, let's slip over to the other side of the bracket real quick before we get into our main topic here. I got the, another tough matchup. Now this one is tough because I got Columbus going against the Islanders.
Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, the Islanders, they've underperformed this year, especially compared to last. And Columbus, if I remember correctly, was starting to play better before the shutdown. So yeah, I don't like this 3-game thing. I don't like the 3 games at all.
But you look at it this way. Both teams pulled surprises in the last two playoff seasons. And they're pretty much got the same personnel.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, Columbus beating Tampa last year obviously was heard around the NHL world, but, you know, the Islanders made that long run as well before they succumbed, and pretty much they all have the same rosters. They're disciplined teams, I believe, that really know their systems. They follow their systems, and I'm going to say the winner of that series basically is the one who is able to play the way they want to play. As far as their system goes, without a hiccup, they're gonna take that series. So that's gonna be a chess match over there. See which one breaks. Next series I have right now is a temporary. If they go this format, is another interesting one because you got Pittsburgh playing Montreal, which would mean Sidney Crosby probably playing in Canada in the playoffs for the first time in like 10 years. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, depending on what city they decide on to play the games, that's the other.
You're right.
Weird
you're
part, right. Yeah. Depending on what neutral site they put them at, but yeah, it could be up in a western province. Yeah, or no, they're in the east. They'd be stuck in Florida, or I can't see them playing in Montreal just because of the population there.
Yeah, I'm thinking maybe a small rural. In province.
They could even put them at the, what's the rink where they played the Lake Placid games at? I don't know the rink, but they could play there.
Or they could go to Hamilton.
Yeah.
Hamilton's always been vying for a team. And they do, it's a steel city, a blue collar city. I don't know what the population is there, but, you know, it's, I don't know if there are people that are actually living on top of one another, like in a major city, but, you know, I do think they're, like you said, they're going to probably have two locations if they go four in the States and two in the Canadian provinces.
So I would take Pittsburgh in that matchup.
Yeah, just because it's boring, and I think who's Murray is their goalie? Who's the goalie up in Pittsburgh now?
Yeah, it's still Murray. They have another kid there that's playing really good. Was it Tim Jari or Tom Jari?
Yeah, I know it's tough these days to pinpoint the goaltending and who the goaltending is. A lot of times it's just like, unless it's a household name, it's usually done by committee. So
yeah, it was Matt Murray, and I want to say that like Tim Jari or Tom Jari, it's T Jari. I think he was playing really well this year, and I think he's pushing Murray out, which is kind of weird because Murray's still pretty young.
That happens a lot over in Pittsburgh. Ever since Crosby came on board, you know, there's been goalies, like even when Andre Fleury was there, or Marc Fleury, right?
Yeah, Marc-Andre Fleury. It's Marc-Andre.
Yeah, Marc. Well, anyway, ever since he was over there, I don't know. It seems like he got bumped one year, too. So it's like, it seemed to go with the hot hand over there, which probably should be the way you do it. This next series is interesting, too. You got probably two of the bigger markets in NHL. Bettman probably be licking his chops over that, even though it is only a three-game series, possibly. But yeah, the Rangers against the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Oh, man. Oh, that's tough. I guess that one would depend on which Toronto team shows up.
Exactly.
The Rangers played pretty good, too, at times. They won some games they probably shouldn't have won when the season was running.
That's kind of much reminiscent of the across the way there with Edmonton and what's the other team they were playing, Chicago. I mean, that's probably going to be a track meet.
Yep. Yeah, that'll be a fun one to watch.
Two old series back, that kind of throwback 80s playoff hockey right there.
Yep.
Or yeah. 80s with Edmonton involved, because there still was some type of the best hockey games.
Yeah,
in the 80s. But yeah, I can see those games being up and down, and goaltenders being very busy on those second shot opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'll be exciting to watch for a couple games. I wish these were all seven games, but for three, it's such a toss-up in three games.
On the last series in that preliminary round, and all these teams would be teams that were considered on the bubble those last 2 weeks, fighting for a place to get you into the playoffs. But you got Florida Panthers versus Carolina Hurricane in that last series.
I like the Hurricanes. I'd be pulling for the Hurricanes in that one. They had some good young scoring up front.
You know, I like their power play. They always seem that their power play is really gelled in the last couple of years. That's what made them. They had that long playoff run, I think, last year, right? And a lot of it was done on special teams. And I think if they can get hot in that regard, I think they can do well.
Yeah, I think they could. They could be pretty. They have a bright future, I think, here in the next 4 or 5 years. It's just they got Mrazek in goal, and he can get hot, but he's real streaky and he's hit or miss. That's their. They need to tighten up that goalie position.
What I never liked about Mrazek is, and people always like, they seem to look at flash more than actual technique. And why isn't he unseating Howard? And this is when Howard kind of changed his style a little bit. He kind of toned it down a little bit, let the play come to him more, the shots.
Right.
Well, Mrazek, I think he overplays. Sometimes he loses his positioning in the net. Yeah. He doesn't know where he's at based on the markings. That's what the crease is for. That's
right.
What these markings are on the ice for the goaltender. And I think sometimes it got to the point where, he was overplaying like shots, thinking they were going to be passes even sometimes, instead of letting the defenseman take away those lanes. He tried to do both, and then it kind of threw his balance off on a lot of these second shots or shot passes, and then he would always be out of position when he was with Detroit.
Yeah.
I think they really wanted to work with him on that aspect, but his attitude wasn't all that great from what I'm hearing, and you heard Ozzy drop a few comments about it without actually, coming out and saying it. So I kind of got the vibe that's why he was moved out of Detroit.
Right. No, I agree. He definitely was out of position. He did. He seemed like he was almost intentionally to leave a lane or leave a spot of the net open to see if he could make a big flashy save on it. And then he'd out of position and leave the net wide open, and he looked lost at times.
Yeah, he looked like a fish out of water, man, you know, flopping around in a boat. It was kind of embarrassing. But hey, anyway, real quick, since we've gone this far with this, let's, you know, if Florida, the winner of Florida, Carolina would eventually play the Capitals, okay, which is a tough out. You know, mm-hmm. I think, you know, Washington realizes that, you know, they've kind of been embarrassed in the playoffs since they won the cup. Mm-hmm. So they need to get back, and, you know, I'm sure they want to get back to prominence, especially Ovi. I'm sure one cup isn't enough for him. Now that he's got a taste of it, but I can see that being an interesting matchup for whatever team advances against them. Another interesting thing is the winner of Toronto, New York would play Tampa.
Okay.
That's pretty interesting, eh?
Yeah, I wonder how this is all going to play out too for the team with the bye. And if the second round, are they going to go, they haven't said yet if they're going to be 5 games or 7 games.
I think it jumps to 7.
Jumps to 7. Okay. At least that'll give the team with these byes, if you will, some time to get some of their feet under up and get back playing, because they're going to be even more out. And it's only 2 games, 3 games, but still, that's huge when you haven't played in a long time.
Yeah, it's almost like a week off figure. So, yeah. But get, you know, they might go right into it, being they might be in the same venue waiting. Plus, it gives, like, Tampa, they're going to be, these teams right. that got buys, they're going to be in-house being able right. to scout.
Right.
So that's kind of an interesting element, too, don't you think?
Yeah, that's another piece. Yeah, they don't have to get ready for the team they're playing. They're going to watch, and when they have their turn to practice, they're going to be practicing against the two styles that they're watching every night.
Exactly.
So, yeah, it's interesting. Yeah.
Well, the same bracket, let's go up top. And the Montreal-Pittsburgh winner is going to face Philadelphia. So okay. You could have your typical Pennsylvania show.
Mm-hmm.
And those two teams are heated, and over the years have had some battles and series of, I remember the one series that was so high scoring, and no lead was ever safe. The goaltending wasn't all that great in the series, and a lot of cheap shots going on, and a lot of special teams play going on. But, you know, I know Crosby and Malkin and some of the people like Giroux and some of the people that have been in every rivalry game since Crosby's been in the league would probably lick their chops for one more of those, eh?
Right, yeah, for sure.
And then the last matchup, but going back up top, we got the Islanders, winner of Islanders, Columbus, going against the Bruins.
Yeah, the Bruins.
What team do you think would match up better with Bruins, Joe? Do you think it would be the Islanders or Columbus?
Oh, man. Probably the Islanders. I think they'd have the better. I don't know. Columbus was playing pretty good at the end there. I think Boston would win regardless, but
right. I'd like to see the Islanders. Boston can play it anyway. Do you think a physical team? I mean, I don't know how if the Islanders are physical or not. I haven't seen them play much this year. I know they're a hard-working team, but I think Columbus could bring the leather a little bit more, lay some hits on Boston, but I don't necessarily think it would intimidate Boston because of their depth.
Right.
I mean, you can't really throw pucks in and soften their D up. They're like 9 deep back there. It's like got guys that really don't get intimidated going back and retrieving pucks. Even their small guys, you know. So, I don't know. I don't really know what style they would play to get through on that one. But, yeah, you got to believe Boston will get by no matter what.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I have in the first 2 rounds on that side. And then going back, let's shoot back up to Calgary, and we'll breeze through these real quick. We got Calgary and Winnipeg. The winner of that is going to face the defending Stanley Cup champion, St. Louis Blues.
Oh, man, that's good. What a great two rounds over there.
Yeah, that is. I see Winnipeg maybe being a better matchup, mainly because of the physical presence they have. I don't think Calgary scores enough.
Right.
For some reason, Goudreau would have to play big, and I don't know. I don't know if his size allows him to do that in the playoffs. That's what scares me about that team there and their inconsistency. But you did it. You know, you got Tkachuk there with another year under his belt, and you know, couple big forwards that they've gotten over there, so they might be ready for that challenge. I don't know.
Did the Blues didn't play the Jets last playoff, did they? No.
Yeah, I can't remember.
They weren't. Yeah. I don't think the Jets were in the playoffs last. Were the Jets? Yeah, I can't remember.
Oh, I can't either.
Trying to think back. They did. They did play them. I think they beat them in six. Six or seven.
It wasn't
six.
That competitive of a series, if I remember correctly.
Six. Yeah, I don't. I remember watching them.
Fell off the map. Him and Wheeler, they lit it up in the first two rounds, and then just nothing. I think they played in the Eastern Conference, didn't they? Finals or
no? They played. I'm trying to find it now while we're talking. They played in the first round. They did. They played in the first round. They were all one goal games except for. Winnipeg won 6-3 one of the games. All the rest were one goal games.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Six games, wasn't it?
Yeah, it went six.
Yeah.
It went six. So yeah, there's some history there.
That's a good bracket. You also go over into Chicago, the winner of Chicago Edmonton would face Dallas, who to me is due. I mean, they pretty much putting all the pieces together, they can play a defensive style. They've proven it over the course of the year that they're one of the better defensive teams. They also have some turnaround on the other end and can hurt you offensively with the scorers they have. So they could be a dangerous team too.
Yeah, they were good last year too. They lost to the Blues in a double overtime in Game 7. So they were right there.
Yep. So they're ready to take that next step, and that experience they took last year, I think would bode well for them. Then you got Vancouver. Phoenix would play a tough Vegas team, who I believe is a team that's built for the playoffs. Gallant had pieced together a nice team of sizable forwards and guys who can really get up and down the ice and beat you on transition, and as Marc-Andre Fleury goes, so goes Vegas. So as long as he's healthy and in the pipes, if they go to their backup, which I believe is, isn't that Subban? Is he still over there?
I believe so.
Yeah, you just get it's a drop off there. So you're going to.
Yeah.
It's Liner's over there, isn't he?
Yep, you're right. At the trade, they got him. Did they get him the whole year or the trade deadline? He is there. Robin Leonard.
Yeah, I don't remember, but that's scrap what I said about that because that's obviously proven.
Subban was the backup for so they got Leonard at the trade deadline.
Is he Subban still there though?
From what I can tell, he's still on the roster.
Well, Leonard's probably going to leave, so. But still, that can't sit well with Subban. You know, you're sitting there, and then all of a sudden they bring another guy in $6 million price tag.
I don't remember. Was it cap friendly? I think Leonard was it. I think this is the last year of his contract. That's why he's traded. So he should be a free agent, right? So there.
He wants a starting gig somewhere.
Yeah.
We talked about going to Detroit, but the price tag and the age kind of hinders that. Hey, Joe, this last round with the first play-in series, you got Minnesota and the winner at Nashville going against Colorado, which is another team that has something to prove.
Right. Yeah, I'd want Colorado to win that one. They're still pretty young, though. That they might. That's one where they might get surprised. I'd want Colorado to win, but depending on who they play, who was it? Minnesota and Nashville. Yeah, I think depending who wins, I think if Nashville wins, they might be able to pull an upset over Colorado.
Right. You know, if everything plays true to form, though, let's say these top 8 teams like make it through. You got some good matchups there. You got Washington possibly going against Tampa Bay. Now we know this isn't going to happen because I'm sure there's going to be some upsets, but and you got Philly Boston, which would be
pretty amazing. Great.
And then you got on the other side, you got Dallas St. Louis, which would be pretty good, a rematch. And then you got Vegas against Colorado, which would be, you know, two different styled teams, you know, two good skating clubs, and our goaltending, I think, would be the edge there. I mean, that's where probably Marc-Andre Fleury gets the nod, but yeah, it'd be interesting, but we know there's that probably not going to play out that way. There's always upsets, and especially in this 2-of-3 format, the whole thing will shake out, but I just thought I want, off the cuff, we weren't going to talk about this, but I figured it'd be something just to, instead of talking about where the league is at with this return to play scenario, we thought we'd throw this at you as part of that.
Yeah, no, it's good. It'll be exciting. It's going to be different, that's for sure. And I know Bettman said they're going to scrap the regular season. They're just putting all their focus on figuring out this playoff thing. So I think that's the reason why they're expanding the playoff to give those bubble teams at least a play-in chance.
And you and I talked about, we said that'd probably be the scenario to go with, and you know the season, you know, yeah, you're going to lose $150 million, but I think there's too many teams, and as long as it doesn't screw up the draft lottery and everything, I think yeah, just go right into the playoffs, and you know, let's get a cup winner, and it'll be back to normal probably once that second round starts. I think people will just won't look at it as too much of a gimmick anymore. It'll be good old-fashioned playoff hockey as usual. But
yeah,
it's going to be key to keep those ice surfaces.
That'll be
a grind.
Yes, for sure. Yeah, I read something weird today about Joe Buck. I don't know if you just read this. He got interviewed.
Not a big fan of Joe Buck. He annoys me. I like his dad a lot.
Yeah, he was interviewed. I read it. I didn't listen to him talk, but he said that they're talking for the NFL season of they're going to use virtual crowd noise and plug in virtual fans on wide shots so that for the viewers at home, it looks like it'll be like a video game. There's going to be like virtual people in the crowd.
To me, that's kind of, I did hear a little bit about that. It's kind of gimmicky. You know, seriously, then you know what's going to happen, Joe? There's going to be gamesmanship because, you know, unless they play at neutral site venues, I mean, but could you imagine, like, the NFL does that, you know, they still have their home games in their stadiums. Could you imagine them playing the volume up a little bit when their team's on defense, you know?
Right.
It's like, juicing the decibels up and everything, then you're going to hear people complaining about that. It's like, really? I don't think people are really going to care like what the crowd looks like in the back when Stafford's dropping back. You know, I don't think people are really going to pay any heed to that. So, I don't know. To me, it's just a waste of money, man. Give the money to charity or something, the money you would expend into that. Give it to some worthy charity
that
isn't Planned Parenthood or something.
That's
my political thing for the day, Joe.
There you go. Yeah. All right, let's jump into our topics. We wanted to talk about, we wanted to get a little tough. Now, I'll be honest, I watched, I didn't finish the whole thing, but I was watching the Tough Guy Bob Probert documentary to get amped up to talk about some tough guys today.
Yeah, I saw that show, and it was good, but I saw it when it first came out, and I thought it could have been better. I thought it could have been a little more controversial because he was a controversial fella. But I knew when I saw it, he was shortly after his death. And I think, I don't know if that had anything to do with it, but he had a lot of demons. And I'm guessing you don't want to portray him too much that way. He had a lot of good in him. So what did you think, Joe, when you watched that?
I saw it a while back. I was actually just been rewatching it the last couple of days. Just like I said, get pumped up for this. But I didn't think it was too bad. There was some stuff that I had, you know, that I knew back in the day, because in the mid 80s, right, I was 5-6 years old. So like I remembered the whole cocaine deal, but you know, I've forgotten all the details over the years. So seeing that and most of the clips they played, right, I had seen, you know, either live when they happened or rewatched them on YouTube since then. But I just like getting the other people's perspective on, you know, what it was like playing against him and things that were going on, and you know, just hearing the overall. My favorite is when he was in the All-Star game and Gretzky was like afraid to talk to him and was asking people to introduce him so he could meet Bob.
Yeah, I know. There's a picture with Probert and Messier and Gretzky, I think, together. It's a pretty cool picture, actually. So, but anyway, Probert, I've heard a lot of stories about him, and some that would have been pretty fitting for that movie. It probably would have been a little bit more interesting, but that's just me, though. You know, I hear a lot of stuff from guys I used to play with that played with them, and you know, up in the pro level, and you know, not that they were talking bad about him, but just the fact that he, you know, geez, he did this at a bar, and he did this, and right, you know, just totally crazy stuff, man. But it could have made the grade for even his book that I read, and I didn't see any of those stories in there even. So,
okay.
But anyway, I felt the same way about the Russian 5 movie. I thought they could have talked more about the espionage portion of it, where Kozlov and Konstantinov or Fedorov came over and just, but I guess probably with the Russian Hockey Federation, maybe they kind of had a little contract not to do that. So, but anyway, so segueing the tough guy motif for this, you're figuring this 50 all-time penalty minute leaders, which kind of shocked me when I looked at the list, Joe, because, you know, I grew up in watching hockey in the 70s, part of the 60s, late 60s. I was real young, though. And then just the history of it. I was a historian, so I used to check box scores. And I'd know every player on every team, you know, that type of kid, you know. And I'm surprised to see a lot of guys maybe when I was in my 30s following the sport that kind of taken over this list. Right. So I probably see like two or three guys from like when I was, you mentioned when you were 5 or 6 or whatever, and Kobe was just starting to drop his gloves at the pro level. Mm-hmm. Well, I remember seeing some of these guys when I was a kid watching on Hockey Night in Canada, you know, as a 7-8-year-old. And, surprised to see only a handful of them still on the list. But I wanted to go over it. It made me think of something. I wanted to pick some players off this list that I think would be multidimensional players that could probably still fit in to the game back when I watched it. So kind of role reversal.
Mm-hmm.
I would think perhaps. And then the guy that maybe I have a guy on the honorable mention list that is back from my era of watching as a kid that would probably could play today, but I don't think so. But I would liken him to a certain player, and I want to touch on that a little later as well. So basically the first is no particular order, but I'll tell you their rank on the 50 list, okay, Joe? Okay. But I'm going to start with a guy named Dale Hunter, okay? Played with the Quebec Nordique, played with, that's where he got his nastiness with all those Montreal rivals back when I was there in the early 80s. This was probably the heatest, heat, uh, the most heated rivalry of in sport, really. You had the Quebec Nordiques going against the Montreal Canadiens. This was more than just a battle of two cities. It was mainly a political thing, too, with the province, with Quebec and, that type of thing. So these two cities really hated each other in more ways than one. And I used to see these teams battle during warm-ups. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you a funny story. I had this kid named Shane McEachern who ended up playing pro hockey. He was a young 15-year-old kid who played in Verdun. Came up young. And I had tickets, was given them to this game that you actually, the famous Quebec playoff series when they came into Montreal and they had that big brawl during the warm-ups. You can see it on YouTube. Well, I had tickets to that game, and I gave them to Shane, and he was dating the general manager's daughter, kind of like a young blood thing in real life.
Okay.
So of the Verdun Juniors, he was dating his daughter, and he's a real nice kid out of a small Canadian town, and I kind of took him under my wing. Well, I gave him these tickets just so he could, and I told him, you go sell them for face value. You can keep the money. Because what happened, Joe, is we get player passes. So we get into any function at the Montreal Forum for free. Mm-hmm. So I said, here, I had my junior paycheck and I got paid by the Canadians at the time. So I told him, here you go. He's out there scalping these tickets and he comes back like 10 minutes later and he made like $300 a pop off each ticket. So he pulls out a wad of like $1,200. I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. So, I don't know if I should be saying that on the radio, but I think, hey, we're like 40 years or whatever. We're like 20 years removed. Do that or 50 years, whatever.
40, yep. That's 40.
He's my God, 40. So anyway, so we laughed about it. So he gave me basically my money back for the tickets and he kept the difference and just said, just don't say anything. I said, man, you're going to get me in trouble. But anyway, Dale Hunter played in that game and he was he stirred everything. Now, ironically, his brother Mark was on the Canadiens at the time. So, but this guy, Joe, he has 1,400 games under his belt. And the thing that amazes me and why I would, this guy was a captain of many of his teams. He ended up coaching the London Knights because he's a very knowledgeable hockey guy, but he was a plus 101 in over 1,400 games. And to be a guy like that who was usually a neutralizing center who would chip in with some offense. He had over 1,000 points, 323 goals. But he ranked second in penalty minutes at all time, which blew my mind. He had like 3,565 penalty minutes.
Yeah.
Only behind, I think, Tiger Williams.
Yeah, he's not that big either, is he? He's only like 5'9", 5'10".
5'9", 5'10", but man, he was dirty. But he was a leader, and you look at his stats here, Joe. He's got 92 power play goals in his career, which isn't a lot if you break down the fact he played 20 years, or 20 plus years, or somewhere in that neighborhood. But still, though, I mean, it just goes to show you the guy played in penalty kill situations, and was good enough to play on a power play with some pretty good teams. I mean, he ended up going to Washington. He played with a lot of, on them Quebec teams. He was playing with Michel Goulet and the Stastny brothers, for crying out loud. So, he did it. He did it all. So that's basically why I think he's a guy on this list that he could play and bring so many different dimensions to a team's roster.
Yeah, he was real consistent and a good leader. I never realized. I knew when he retired that he was up there in penalty minutes and put up 1,000 points, but yeah, I didn't realize his playmaking ability. Good solid center with some good vision and a lot of hockey knowledge.
Yeah, 697 assists, Joe. That's nothing to sneeze at. It's almost an assist every two games in his career.
Yeah, so I think that's. That's like one of those things. He's a sneaky guy. You'd remember him for being dirty and for collecting a lot of penalty minutes. And then, boom, he retires. And you're like, what? Dale Hunter's got 1,000 points? How do you do that?
Exactly. So that's why he's on this list for me. Now, my second guy, and when I talk about these guys, it's like there's an amazement factor. Some of them will be, you know, okay, yeah, I get that because, you know, maybe he played in Detroit or whatever and we know him somewhat. But the second guy on my list is Rick Tocchet. Now, the thing that just blew my mind about Tocchet was the dude had 440 goals. And he wasn't a great skater. So, and I'm looking at his stats, and I looked over his career, and another guy with over 1,000 games played. He had 1,144 games, finished 10th in the, out of the list of 50 with 2,970 penalty minutes. He had 952 points in 1,144 games. That's almost a point a game. And he was a plus player. Another guy, like, see, and there were some players on this list I left off because they were minus players. But what this guy tells me is he had 50 game winning goals in his career, and he had 130 power play goals and 13 shorthanded goals. So this, once again, another player, another tough player. I guess you could consider him a power forward back in the day. That's what he was. Who could do it all. I mean, he wouldn't. And another guy who's a coach, ironically. Isn't that weird so far, Joe? You see a theme going on here?
Yep, I do. Yeah, no, he scored 40 goals a few times, but I always just remember him being a tough guy. I don't really remember him, you know, scoring a lot of goals, just more of a shutdown grinder in your face. But yeah, he had quite a few good years and was a real good fit on those Phoenix teams early on in their franchise after that move from Winnipeg.
Yeah, he was a tough guy. They taught him how to play playoff hockey. A lot of those guys. Hey, Joe, wasn't he brought up in a discussion with us when we were talking about 50 goal scorers with 200 penalty minutes?
Yeah, we were trying to figure out. He just short. Yeah, he had 48 goals. He didn't get to the 50.
Yeah, so you got a couple guys on this list I took, ironically, that came, well, one of them did that, but I believe, so we'll touch on that in a little bit. But yeah, Rick Tocchet, he kind of was one of those transitional Philadelphia Flyers early in his career that tried to hold on to that Broad Street Bullies mentality. Had good teams there when Mark Howe was over there, and you know, but, you know, he fit the mold. That's, he played with, Brian Propp and all those guys, and he was a young kid, and, just the perfect team for him to be drafted to, for sure.
Right. Yeah.
Next guy, somebody we know, we loved to hate him when he was in Chicago, and we loved to love him when he was here, Chris Chelios. Guy that was ranked 12th. In the list of 50 with 2,891 penalty minutes, and obviously is and played 1,651 games, 185 goals, which is modest for the career his length. I think that his style puzzled me because when he first came into the league with Montreal, I thought I was at a couple training camps with him, and him and I used to go to this Greek restaurant right across the old Montreal Forum off Atwater there. And, cause we're both Greek boys. And, so he grabbed me. We went in his truck, and for some reason we got in his truck and moved it out of the parking area and moved it on in front of the breakfast establishment. And that was his first training camp. It was my second cause he was over playing with the Olympic team the year before.
Okay.
You know, he knew I played with LaFontaine because, we met each other at a party, with all the Olympic players. They were in town playing an exhibition game, my second year in Verdun. So I met Chris, and he was playing out of Wisconsin at the time, and he had 763 assists. But we all know, and the thing that amazes me is this guy was he was a plus 251, I think, in his career. Is that what that says, Joe?
Three fifty-one. Yeah, that's even crazier.
Yeah, I got the paper, part of my paper that I wrote that down. But, you know, a modest number is 13 shorthanded goals, 31 game winning goals, has 69 power play goals, which for him are modest numbers because, like I said, when he came into the league, I thought he was going to be a little more offensive than his numbers appeared to be. Mm-hmm. Even though 148 points is nothing to sneeze at, but I was thinking he would be more of a point a game kind of guy. But still, knowing the way Chelios played and how he was gritty and he battled and how he owned the front of the net, and he wasn't a big guy, and he did it well and consistent, and he was kind of a pest out there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's why I added him to the list, you know, and he could play in any way for you. So you could use a guy like this. He could be a tough guy. I never really saw him drop gloves all that much in his career. You ever notice that?
Yeah, not a lot. He did more, I think, in his early Chicago days and Montreal days when he had to. But yeah, it wasn't a regular occurrence.
Yeah, I know in Montreal he had to do that. You know, playing in that league with the tough teams like Boston and Buffalo and the rivalries that those games presented. I mean, in Philadelphia, obviously, he would always be going at it with Hextall after that one playoff series. You know, but he's on this list and he deserves it. And I basically be a tough guy that I would definitely add because he's multifaceted as well. So,
yeah, remember when he came to Detroit, he was like 35, 36, and we thought he's going to play a year or two, and he ends up being in Detroit for like 9 seasons.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, definitely. Another player where, you know, we talked about Larionov in previous shows and how the move to Detroit just extended his career, gave him more of a pulse as far as his career goes. And it's the same for Chelios. I mean, he came over here. And, you know, he's paired with Hall of Fame defensemen. I mean, I'm sure he was ecstatic about it. So not maybe coming to Detroit at first and putting a wing wheel on because, it, you know, it's a pretty tough thing to do with the rival. Mm-hmm. But, you know, he saw it for what it was, and it didn't take him much to acclimate. I do remember the trade and remembering, why are they bringing this guy over here? But I knew, you know, being a hockey guy, I knew why they were bringing him over.
Right.
So. Next guy, Joe, guy you, I think you kind of like him, Scott Stevens, guy who can, probably best open ice hitter in the league at the time. And another guy, you look at him and he's a big guy and you don't see, like, you don't think mobility would be part of his, strength, but he had another guy that was in the 900 point mark. Kind of the same career as Chelly, but he's just a bigger build. 1,635 games, a few short than Chelly, actually, like 16, was it about, was he a 16 game short of Chelios's total?
Yep.
Their numbers are pretty similar. He has like 6 more goals than Chelios and probably about 51 assists short of his. So, but yeah, he ranked 14 in the penalty minutes as well, like just 2 slots behind Chelly. But he's a guy that's plus minus was 395. Almost the same power play goals too, 75-69. And then he had 5 shorthanded goals and 34 game winning goals. But, trust me, I know he kept quite a few people out of the hot area in front of his goaltender and obviously had guys looking up over the middle of the ice. So for that alone, I'm picking this guy on my team as a tough guy for sure.
Yeah, I like his, I mean, obviously he led New Jersey to quite a few Stanley Cups and some deep playoff runs. But I feel like his career is interesting because I remember him in like the late 80s. He was like a skinny kid. For the Capitals, he was just like a tall, skinny guy, like not filled out. And then he ends up in New Jersey. And by the time they get to that 95 Stanley Cup Finals against Detroit, he was huge. It was like he finally like grew into himself in his mid to late 20s when he showed up in New Jersey and completely changed his style. He went from being a middleweight fighter / point producer to more of a stay-at-home, hard-hitting defenseman that could flash some offense if he had to.
Yeah, he played with St. Louis, too, I believe.
Yeah, I think he was there for a year or two, maybe, in between. Yeah.
I don't know. I'd like to know how many years he played for them, but I know for a fact that
he had his best playoff success with New Jersey, obviously, but he played on a lot of good Washington teams that could never get over the hump. Mm-hmm. You know, they won President Cups over there under Murray. They had some good defense corps over there, and he was part of them. But, I don't know when he did a lot of his scoring. Probably early in his career, maybe with Washington and St. Louis.
Yeah, with the Capitals he scored.
A little more mobile. But anyway, he's a guy that you would like to have back there as a tough guy. And it's another guy I never really saw drop the gloves all that much. And, you know, Joe, we could talk about tough guys and you know, there's no tougher guy in the league than Mark Messier, and I'm just using him as an example. Or, you know, guys knew he was tough, so they never really tested the guy.
Right.
And, you know, so people think, well, he didn't drop his gloves, he's not tough. No, there was no need for him. He gave enough guys forearm shivers with those elbows of his, just like Gordy did. But he was more valuable on the ice. You know, he would loosen your dentures, and then he would score off the front foot coming down a rush. That was his way of saying right back at you. But yeah, so a lot of these guys, you don't drop the gloves. Doesn't necessarily mean they're not tough.
Right.
So, you know, and that's us, you know, I've made that comment both about Chelios and Stevens. They logged a lot of minutes too. So these guys are guys that are also playing 20 plus minutes a game and tough minutes. So.
Yeah, I pulled him up. He scored 9 seasons. He had 10 or more goals. He had 21 in 84-85 with the Capitals, 16 of them on the power play.
Yeah, and I believe one of those, they had all their offense was coming from a 4 or 5 man defensive core with Langway and this other Johansson guy or whatever. They had this other guy who was, they all had 20 goals, I think, 4 defensemen, Iafrady. So, but yeah. I think it was Kevin Hatcher might have been.
They got 84. Yeah, that 84-85 season. Stevens had 21 goals. Larry Murphy had 14. Mike McEwen, another defenseman, had 11. Langley had 4. Darren Veach, I remember that name. He had 3.
The team earlier that had, Johansson. His name was or something, and Iafrady, I think, or Kevin Hatcher, the younger Hatcher, I think played on that team, but I think maybe it was in the 80s, maybe a little later. When Stevens, they all had 20 goals each, I think, which is it's pretty rare back then. It'd be rare today.
Right.
But my next guy on my list, Joe, is a strong winger. Actually, he's helped a lot of guys in modern hockey right now with their workout programs. He's a guy that's always been a religious off-season worker, kept himself in shape. His name's Gary Roberts.
Mm-hmm.
Hard-nosed forward, was 19th on the top 50 penalty minutes with 2,560, and he had 910 points in 1,224 games, including 438 goals. Another guy that had 109 power play goals, and he was a plus 229, which tells me he's a very responsible player. I know he was tough because I watched his career. He's just a guy you'd love to have, a character guy as well. And he played on a few teams in his career. I don't know if you could consider him a journeyman, but just a guy that I think was traded mainly because of his impact on a team. I think mm-hmm. he played with some teams that had great playoff success and some teams that maybe underachieved, but was never because of this guy. And I know up until his career ended, he was always a hard-nosed player who was dropping the gloves and, you know, also producing. So for that, I have him in my top seven for sure.
Yeah, I remember him in his Calgary days in the late 80s, early 90s.
Gilmer?
And Roberts, yeah, when he was with the Flames. And then I remember seeing him pop back up in Toronto. But, yeah, he played for a few teams, and I don't really remember him too much on those other teams, just mainly from watching Hockey Night in Canada, seeing him with the Leafs. But I remember him being really, really good producing. I think he scored 50 one year for the Flames.
And I know he had a couple other years where he almost notched 50. Didn't he play with Pittsburgh as well?
Yeah, he played at the end of his career, towards the end with Pittsburgh. I think when they were, I think he was on either the Stanley Cup team that beat the Red Wings or the year that they lost to the Red Wings. He was on one of those two teams.
I just know the kind of reminded me of, he was always a guy like Tkachuk, Keith Tkachuk, in the sense that, but I think he had more discipline than Keith somewhat, you know. But the next guy on the list, Joe, is Brendan Shanahan. We all know him. Love him. He's the player, I think, that turned the tide for the Red Wings. Playoff fortunes and Stanley Cup dreams. 1,524 games. 23rd on the all-time penalty list with 2,489. Total of 1,354 points, 656 goals, 698 assists. This guy had 237 power play goals, Joe. So 109 of game winners and 23 shorthanded goals. And he did all that and maintained a plus 151. And this guy, when he had to fight, he would fight, and he was a heavyweight. Probably a prototypical power forward that could do it all.
Yeah, I loved him when he was in St. Louis. I don't really remember him too much. I didn't see a lot of the Devils Jersey. When he was with New Jersey. We only played, Detroit played him like once or twice. It's not like they were ever on Hockey Night in Canada where I could watch them on a Saturday. So I don't remember too much from New Jersey, but when he came over to St. Louis, and I think it was still in the Norris division in the early 90s. I don't know if they changed the name yet, but he was putting up 50 goals a year, close to 200 penalty minutes. He put up over 200 one of those seasons. I was a huge fan of his. And then they, I don't remember if they traded him to Hartford.
Or traded him to Chris Pronger.
Chris Pronger, that's right. Yeah, for Pronger. That worked.
Yeah. Is he on this list, Chris Pronger?
He might be somewhere in the 50. I didn't go through the whole thing yet, but I was sad. I was a big Paul Coffey fan, so when we traded Paul Coffey for him, I was slightly bummed, but I was a huge Shanahan fan, so I got over it quickly. And yeah, he was awesome as a Red Wing.
Yeah, like I said, they traded him to St. Louis, I believe. They traded him for Pronger, okay? And then he came to Detroit for, I believe, Primo, right?
Yeah, Primo and Coffey, and I believe they sent someone else for Shanahan and Brian Glenn, who I don't remember if he even played a game for the Red Wings, or if we just waved him.
Throw in, yeah. I don't remember. But yeah, Shanny could do it all, and he solidified that wing spot where we weren't getting much production out of that, consistently. And we were able to balance four lines, but mainly he added that grit and consistency that we needed. His skating was always a question mark, but, he was always a guy who produced. And, there was a time where I got down on him a little bit because, he went through some bad spells here in Detroit, like briefly, but, and then you wondered, okay, you're not moving out there or something, but you know, when he was bad, it was mainly, you know, he's not going to, his skating isn't going to get him by. So,
right.
You know, if he's not fighting, if he's not being physical, he's kind of out of his element. You know, and it affects his scoring. But when he's physical and doing everything, it's like, I guess some teams probably kind of held him the same way or approached him the same way as Clark Gillies, maybe. You don't want to wake this guy up. So leave right. him alone.
Right.
And let Leaping Bear lie, so to speak. And I think, that's how teams probably played this guy over his course of his career. Especially, you know, when he was with the Red Wings, I know he had a lot of support around him. But he was another guy, I think his career got extended because he came to Detroit, for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then I was equally bummed when he didn't fit in with the Red Wings' plans, and he left and went to play with the Rangers.
Yeah, it was disappointing. So, you know, it seems like some teams, like a few Red Wings have gone over there to be put out to pasture. Like Ogrodnik was the same way. You remember him?
Mm-hmm.
And he went to New York and a few other. Joey Koser did it, but eventually came back. But, you know, there's a few players throughout the league over the years that gone to finish in New York and got big money and stuff and just, you know, ended their career. Some of them still had some hockey left in them, whereas sometimes the older players come to Detroit. It's not always the case, especially in the 70s mm-hmm. and 80s. They came here to die, you know, and get that last paycheck and then call it. But anyway, yeah, but Brendan was a good player here and, you know, I think he'll always be remembered as a Red Wing, even though that's a tough call. You know, he's in the Hall of Fame. I'm sure Blues fans would say he's a Blue. I don't remember seeing his induction though. I don't know if, you know, really what he went in as. I don't think he really said it. So I get that because he was loved in St. Louis, although usually you pick the team where you've won the championships, so.
Yeah.
Next guy on this list was a guy I kind of wasn't going to put on the list, but Keith Tkachuk. And we talked about him in past shows. And the reason he's on here is because he had 538 goals. He's 41 on top 50. He had 2019 penalty minutes here. Typical power forward. You know, you see his kids tooling around the rink, you know, now in the NHL. And I believe they have probably better discipline than Keith did early in his career.
Mm-hmm.
Saying a lot, but this guy has another guy has a 200 plus power play goals, Joe.
Yeah, I liked Keith Tkachuk. He was pretty good. He's a leader. But like you said, he was known to take, you'd want to see your captain not take dumb penalties. And he was known to get a little emotional out there.
Yeah, he did. He kind of reminded me of James Neal. You know, mm-hmm. James Neal. James Neal obviously not consistently putting up the numbers this guy did, but James Neal and the penalty aspect that you just mentioned is kind of the same way. You know, and they shipped him out of Pittsburgh because his knack for taking dumb penalties, especially in the offensive zone or just where you didn't need to take them, or at mm-hmm. the time of the game when you couldn't afford to take one. Keith Tkachuk did that early in his career, kind of tapered down a little bit later in his career, but, he had a plus minus 33, which nothing to, you know, write home about, but yet at least it isn't in the minus. And, he had 72 game winning goals. So yeah, he'd definitely be a guy. I mean, obviously these other guys I would pick before him, mainly because of the penalty issues early in his career, but, yeah, you can't go wrong with Keith Tkachuk. It's a hockey family, and I believe his uncle played for, I think it's his uncle, Walt, played with the Rangers and the Red Wings. I think there's a relation there. I could be wrong, but anyway, he's a good up-and-down winger, and, you know, it's amazing all these guys kind of played in the same era, isn't it?
Yeah, they did. Yep, they all overlapped at some point.
Yeah, which, you know, and then Joe, I got a couple honorable mentions that are on this list that Terry O'Reilly played for the Bruins. Now, his numbers kind of surprised me the most on this list because here was a guy that played with the big bad Bruins, okay, really tough teams, probably some of the toughest teams that you'll ever see in NHL history. And, you know, people want to talk about Probert Koser days, which, you know, but these guys were a team full of tough guys. And Terry O'Reilly was a guy who worked hard at both ends of the ice. I was really shocked to see how responsible he was defensively. 222 in the positive as far as plus minus. You know, but here he only played 891 games. It's not only, it's a long career, but especially with a player back in the, you know, in the days where he was playing, in the era he played, where, you know, he was bringing it every night. 891 games, he had 204 goals, but he had 402 assists. He had 606 points in 891 games. He was 45th on the list with 2,095 penalty minutes. But they were a hard 2,095. This guy would fight. He'd fight anybody. So right. It didn't. Now, Joe, I mentioned, I think this guy, if he played today, he would be your Lucic.
Okay.
So, I mean, they're kind of similar in style of play and everything. Lucic is a slightly better skater, but I think Terry O'Reilly had a better engine, you know. I think his work ethic was, not saying Lucic doesn't work hard, but I think Terry looked for a lot of mess, you know, when he went on the ice. They basically would do anything to win. Mm-hmm. And a great teammate. I put him on this list mainly because of that, because I know the character that he has. Probably out of this whole list, there's probably nobody with more character, and that's saying a lot, than this guy. And just watching him over the years and realizing, man, he just does not have much talent as far as like looking like a hockey player, but then here he is. 606 points in 891 games and doing it all. And, Don Cherry relied on him and loved him. So.
Right.
It says a lot in my book.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the same Terry O'Reilly that used to coach the Lightning, right? And didn't he coach the Flyers for a bit too?
I'm not sure where he coached, but, he was always a guy that, I don't know what his capacity is now in the sport, if he's even around, but in the NHL ranks, but and where he played. I'd like to maybe look that up, see if he did coach. While you're doing that, Shane Corson's another guy that I put on my honorable mention.
Oh, for sure. I like some Shane Corson.
Just a good hockey player. He was drafted the year after I was, and I remember being in training camp with him. And, you know, he came out of the OHL, and he's a tall kid. He was like 6'2", which surprised me when I saw him in person. And I mean, he had like 693 points in 1,156 games. He was 29th on the penalty list, 2,357. His numbers are modest, 90 power play goals, 6 shorthanded. He had 35 game winners plus 43. Nothing major, but you knew Shane Corson was a professional, and he changed his game when he came out of juniors. He was a scorer, but he ended up becoming one of those. I think Montreal mainly kind of tried to mold him in the way of a bigger Guy Carboneau.
Mm-hmm.
And thought that might be the way to go with him because he was a good enough skater and, you know, he could do everything. But I think it carried through his career. He was a blue-collar guy that did the dirty work. And, you know, you noticed him when he was on the ice. He played for Montreal. He played for St. Louis. And don't remember some of the other teams he played with. But whenever he did, you noticed him on the ice. He wasn't afraid to drop the gloves. He was a tough guy. Fight any weight class, you know. I think he was considered a middleweight, but I see him go at Nick Sorley a lot and guys like, you know, big like that. So he didn't discriminate in that regard.
Yeah. Yeah, he was in Toronto. Was he in Toronto too for a bit? Yeah, he was in Toronto.
He did play in Toronto as well. So basically this guy, you know, he's on my list because of that. He and just a guy that I wouldn't mind having on my team as a third and fourth line guy, you know, that you could push up the second line or first line and he wouldn't look out of place because he was skilled enough.
Right.
You know, Joe. And then the last guy I have is, you know, Pat Verbeek, little ball of hate. The only reason I don't have him in my top seven is because he was a minus 46 in his career. The dude put up 522 goals in 1,424 games. He had 540 helpers, 1,062 points, and he was 11th on the penalty minute list. And I guarantee you a lot of those minutes were because of his mouth or because he speared somebody or just, you know, wouldn't get out of a scrum, that type of thing, or he was parked in front of the net, you know, kind of like some of the better, smaller players or even the bigger players in the league that would torment goalies. He had 2,905 penalty minutes, but he had 186 power play goals. Another guy that you could say would be a good guy to have on your team for sure.
Yeah, I liked him when he was with Detroit. I felt like he was such, I don't want to say he was like a big impact player because we had so much talent on the team when he was here, but it just felt like he was around longer than two seasons, but that's all he was here for.
Yeah, Joe, do you have his numbers when he was in Detroit?
Yeah, he scored 22 goals his first year and 15 his second year.
Okay, and I guarantee you that was with very limited minutes. I guarantee you he probably didn't play 14 minutes a game.
Yeah, it doesn't. Yeah, I'd have to dig deeper. Yeah, that's a hard stat. Have it all up right here.
Hard stat to look up, but I guarantee a lot of these guys, even Luke Robitaille, wasn't playing a lot of minutes when he came over.
Right.
I remember him complaining about it at first, but then he realized, you know, hey, I'm here to win a cup. I'm going to tone it down. It worked out well for him, but I couldn't see Luke running that way for 3 or 4 years with this team.
Right.
Without, you know, him popping off. But, you know, it's all timing and everything. And you bring these players over and you explain their role to them. And some of the guys get it and some don't. I'm going to go back to calling some farms and doing some searching on the website. I got to get that side of beef for my wife's anniversary gift tomorrow. And I'm sure once she sees all those ribeyes hitting the plate, she's going to be pretty excited, Joe.
All right, good luck with that. All right, we'll see you back here next time on the lighter side.